Smith and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Grant Stevenson from the St. Matthew's Lutheran Church in St. Paul. And then following the prayer, remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Morning. How you doing? Good. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Let us pray. Gracious God, we center ourselves in your presence and in the assurance of your love. Prepare our hearts this day to do your work and to take counsel for your people in every walk of life. God of abundance, open our eyes to the great inheritance we were born into and teach us to care for each other, both out of a sense of duty and out of your love. God of hope, guard us from making our decisions this day out of fear, but rather in the knowledge that you invite us forward into a future of justice and peace. God of community, bind us together in word and deed today by reminding us that we are ultimately one people who belong to each other and to you. Settle our minds and our hearts on the work of this generation that you have entrusted to us. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Ress, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stump, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Weger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House. Well, we have an executive official communications that's not on the agenda.
The Honorable Senator James Metzen, President of the Senate. Dear President Metzen, I have vetoed and am returning Senate File 457, Chapter 163. This bill mandates single-member school board election districts for the election of school board members of Bloomington Independent School District Number 271.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 457 and the veto message thereon be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following Senate file. Herewith returned Senate File 2830, signed Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House.
Senator Clark.
This message is on Senate File 2822, Senator Clark. Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House, following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 2822, a bill for an act relating to insurance, providing for penalties and attorney fees for certain insurance claims practices. Senate File 2822 is here with return to the Senate. Signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Clark.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2822 and that a conference committee be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees as part of the Senate to act with like conference committee appointed by part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Another message to be read.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File 3708, signed, Alban A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
The next order of business is first reading of House bills. There's one printed on today's agenda without objection. Be referred to the committee as indicated, first reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports of committee. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. There's one motion, author's motion, printed on today's agenda. Without objection, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There are a number of resolutions, again, printed on today's agenda. Without objection, these resolutions will be sent to the Rules Committee. Remaining on...
Mr. President.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. President, I have a motion. I move that Senate File 651, number 60 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
This is your bill, Senator.
This is my bill, Mr. President, and I just had a fiscal note delivered to my office at 10 to 11, so we have to go back to Finance.
Okay, on the Pappas motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, an error was made on a bill that was captured under Joint 2.03. It's a bill that Senator Latz is the author of, and so I'm going to make a series of three motions to undo that mistake so that Senator Latz's bill can end up on general orders. I don't think it's a bill of any controversy, and... So I would move that, and this was just a mistake. It's a bill that should not have been captured by the rule, but the paperwork was inadvertently handled somehow. So I would move that Senate File 3139 and the committee report thereon be withdrawn from the Committee on Rules and Administration.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
And, Mr. President, I'd move that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended as it relates to Senate File 3139.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd move that the committee report from the Committee on Judiciary on Senate File 3139, shown in the Journal for March 27, 2008, be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Second reading.
Senate File 3139.
Second reading.
Do you want to do it? We're going to hold up on that other one, Mr. President.
On the Senate arrest?
Right, okay. We're going to hold on that one. And
okay.
Then,
without objection, we'll...
The rest one, there's still some lack of clarity as to whether that one actually did miss. So we'll clear that up and do something or not do something later today.
Okay, without objections, remaining under motions, and we'll take up Senate bill introduction and first reading of Senate bills. First reading, Senate bills.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Remaining on the order of business, the motion and resolutions, I move the Senate take up the calendar.
All right, on that motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. There are three bills on the calendar. We'll be voting on these bills. First bill on the calendar, number one, Senate File 2915, third reading.
Senate File 2915, a bill for an act relating to judicial process modifying certain civil and criminal penalties.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 57 ayes, 4 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The second bill on the calendar is Senate File 2706. This is a Senator Pretner Solon bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2706, a bill for an act relating to energy, providing for development and application of building energy usage performance standards.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes, 13 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The number three on the calendar, Senate File 3099, this is a Senator Berglund bill. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 3099, a bill for an act relating to health care, establishing a statewide health improvement program, monitoring child obesity, establishing a health improvement fund, etc.
Mr. President.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, members, this is the health care reform bill we talked about on Thursday or Friday at great length, and I think we recognize there are many good, positive provisions in here. I still remain troubled by some, I think, the very bureaucratic means of attempting to save money. But the point I want to add today is that even if the bill works exactly the way the proponents believe, even if this new bureaucracy and the new system of payment really does save money, it's going to take 4 or 5 years to implement and then 3 or 4 years to watch it take effect. And at the end of those 7 or 8 years, we're still going to, I think even Senator Berglund and others would acknowledge, we're still going to have about 3% of the public without any health insurance whatsoever. And we're still going to have, we may have 1 million-plus people in Minnesota now who can't afford to go to the dentist. We're still going to have about 1 million or so people in Minnesota who can't go to the dentist. They can't get the mental health care they need. These are people with insurance. And even if the bill works exactly the way the proponents believe, we're still going to have not fixed the problem. In 7 or 8 years from now, we're going to still be facing a lot of people who can't afford to get the health care they need. I hope we'll keep this in mind both today and when the bill comes back from conference committee. I think it's time to fix the problem, and I'm appreciative of the good provisions in the bill that will help, but unfortunately we're going to be spending a lot of money on a bureaucracy that I don't think is going to help solve the problem. So I recognize a lot of we're going to be passing the bill today, but I urge people to keep in mind that we're still going to have to come back next year and try and address the people who are uninsured and the many million-plus people who are underinsured. Thank you.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to rise this morning and speak just briefly about this bill because I think, at least for me on a personal basis, and I think for a lot of senators in this room, this may be the most significant bill that we ever vote on. And that vote needs to be certainly a good one. Now, as has been pointed out, there's probably some good things in this bill. The health care home idea that we talked about last week, probably a good idea, and probably a few more in here. But I don't think we need to forget, Mr. President, that Minnesota, up and down this state, probably has one of the finest health care systems in the world. Whether it's Duluth, whether it's Fargo, whether it's Alexandria, whether it's the Twin City area, certainly Mankato, Rochester, Owatonna, Faribault, you can go right down the list. We have some outstanding health care delivery systems. And but for the fact that we've got 5 or 6 or 7% of the people in Minnesota that aren't insured, we're going to, in fact, in my view, begin to dismantle that system. And I think, Mr. President, that really calls for a pause of concern. And as Senator Marty just pointed out, if we do our best, apparently we take this 6 or 7% down to 3. So what have we really accomplished? Other than, in fact, we have dismantled one of the finest healthcare systems in the world. So I think long and hard about this, members. The idea that that we would, in fact, do many of these things. I look at the prevention. Who can argue with prevention? Except for it's one more tax on hospitals. It's one more tax, if you will, on the sick. And I, for one, at least feel that's immoral, that we not ought not to be taxing the sick. Of all the people in our society to tax, the idea that we'd be taxing the sick one more time, I think, is a bad one. We can look at the exchange, and there's people on either sides of that one, but generally speaking, what do we need an exchange for? We've got a great medical insurance business in Minnesota, and they're going to take care of us. But what really bothers me, Mr. President, is the idea that all of a sudden, if you will, the needs of the patient do not come first anymore. It will be the needs of the basket of care. It will be the needs of the bidding process. It will be the needs and the competition which will exist between centers and between doctors. And the very likelihood that the big will succeed within this bidding war and the small may not. In fact, probably will not. And the very fact that we might well have, as a result of this legislation, a good many small hospitals and small medical care providers across Minnesota that simply cannot compete and cannot, frankly, then work in Minnesota anymore and not serve in this thing, I think especially our rural areas, is tremendously bothersome to me. So a lot of work has gone into this, make no mistake. We all know that. But I'm not sure, at least at this point in time, that Minnesota is ready for this kind of legislation. I would far rather carry this one more interim session and let that work continue. And let's find something that really can work and can provide a basis for health care reform in Minnesota. I simply, Mr. President, don't think this is an answer, and I would urge a no vote on this particular bill here today. Thank you so much.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and members, I think there have been some things said on the floor today and last week that leave people with the wrong impression about this legislation. This legislation does not require hospitals or providers, large or small, to negotiate prices with employers or anybody else. What it does do eventually is ask them to have a price. Instead of 500 prices for one thing that they do, to have one price for one thing that they do. And that makes it clearer for everyone to know how to purchase health care. The bill does not create a huge bureaucracy to do all of this. It creates a temporary organization to help create the rules for the system over a period of 4 years. And we know what will happen if we do not act, because we have seen for decades now, healthcare inflation going up 8, 10, 12, 15%. It has been eclipsing the general rate of inflation in our economy by 3 times or more. And so, yes, this is an important bill today because it is the one thing that we've been able to get agreement across the specter for bringing down health care costs. And we know what will happen if we don't bring down health care costs. We will see more uninsured, and we will see fewer providers going into primary care. Every year we see fewer and fewer of them in Minnesota. And when we have fewer physicians going into primary care, where do we see those shortages show up first? In rural Minnesota, because it's harder to get physicians in rural Minnesota to start with. So when you have a smaller pool, you have fewer opportunities to get those providers into rural Minnesota. We need the payment reform that is in this bill, and we need payment reform to go beyond just a medical home. We need payment reform that will encourage a provider to do a simple x-ray on a broken arm when that is what is needed, instead of 2 or 3 MRIs, which drive up the cost of health care. We need payment reform that will reward physicians who spend longer than 10 minutes in their office with a patient who has a chronic disease, because that patient will have a better outcome and will cost the system less in the long run if they are able to do so. We need payment reform because oftentimes getting the news that your tests were just fine in a doctor's office visit is occurring only because that is how the doctor gets paid to tell you that. We need a new system. We need reform. We need payment reform. And this bill is going to give us a chance to move in that direction. Please, members, do not let the perfect be the enemy of the good here today. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I know we don't want to go through and have the same conversation we just had last week, but I just want to reiterate a couple of points. In our Bemidji Pioneer editorial yesterday, it was pointed out once again that there are serious concerns for rural Minnesota with respect to the different tiers of payments in this bill and the ability that rural Minnesota will have to compete. It seems to me that we should be listening to our clinics and our hospitals in rural Minnesota and allow them to have a voice in this debate, allow them to say what they're concerned about and to take those concerns seriously, rather than for us to tell them how this is going to affect their delivery of care. One of the things that the hospital in my district told me is that they've already been contacted by their bonding company, who's told them that this is going to affect their ability to bond in the future because it significantly shifts the risk from the health plans to the hospitals themselves. They're supposed to determine, for example, a bundle of care for diabetes, how much they will charge for that, and now their patient becomes that bundle of care. When they're making so there are financial concerns that they have. My concern is from a caregiving standpoint, that doctor is going to look at that patient having predetermined in a competitive environment, competing against other hospitals for delivering the same services, what treatment that person is going to get and how much treatment that person is going to get, and that the competition is going to drive not necessarily always decisions being made for the best treatment purposes. Certainly, that's the hope of this bill. The hope is that we will help people to become smarter about how they deliver care. But 20 years ago, when managed health care decided that we allowed them to take over the administration of our health care system, that was the same promise they were making then. They were going to use prevention and financial incentives to deliver care in a smarter way. And instead, what we saw was a bureaucracy that has taken money out of the system and that we can't even measure in terms of its costs because we're told it's like comparing apples to oranges. I see the same concerns here with this bill, and I'd urge you to, again, to vote against it.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. And we did have a very lengthy discussion of this bill last week. And I think we all respect and are appreciative of the hard work that Senator Rosen and Senator Berglund and others have put in to try to come up with a bill that would be responsive to many of the concerns that we all have about how to make health care better, how to reform it. I think there's broad agreement that we need to have reform from what we currently have today. And as much as those efforts have been sincere, and as much as there have been a great deal of hard work directed toward this, members, I think that what we have before us is a bill that is very fundamentally flawed, and we should reject it. And one point that we talked about last week that I just want to reiterate here, that we are not going to see health care cost reduction. We're not going to see a reduction in the amount of money we spend on health care. And the saving mechanism that's talked about in this bill, where we're going to take savings, remember, this is a projection of an increase followed by the measurement of the actual increase, and the difference between the projected increase and the actual increase is called a saving, which gets turned back into a tax on the system. This will not provide incentives to lower health care costs. I think what we all recognize, that insurance costs are related to the health care costs, those things are related in large effect to behaviors that each of us make, and the question we have to ask is, what are the things that get at the incentives? What are the things that drive the behaviors that raise these health care costs? And the most important thing we can have is transparency and a system that clarifies the relationship between patients and doctors, treats that as a primary relationship, and take the costing element, the relationship between insurance and other forms of compensation and the individual, and treat that separately. We cannot make a system that takes every single conceivable cost in the whole healthcare arena and put it into a structure and say this is all going to be covered by insurance. That doesn't make any sense. It would be like if we took the car insurance idea and said that we're going to cover every single transportation cost that we have on an individual basis under one payment a month and call it car insurance. Whether it's purchasing a new car, whether it's doing an engine replacement, whether it's buying fuel for our weekly trip, we would say that doesn't make any sense. We have to recognize that in healthcare, just as in transportation, there are ongoing expenses that we expect to pay out of our budget. And there are catastrophic things that happen that we can't predict, and the insurance is for the catastrophe. This bill doesn't make that clear, doesn't provide for that. It still is based on the premise that every single cost should be an insurable cost. And as long as we have that premise, members, we're not going to see any incentives to drive those expenses downward. We're not going to see a reduction in total spending, and we're not going to see any saving. And so we did have a very full and lengthy debate last week about the details of this bill. Many of us are looking for reform, true reform in healthcare. I know there are different ideas on how we do that, and there's not agreement on that. But one of the things that I'm fearful of, that if we pass this bill, it will preclude that discussion from progressing. This body and the political world generally will say, look, we did healthcare reform back in 2008. We're done with that. Let's let it sit for 4, 5, 6, 10 years and see what happens. And we lose the opportunity to engage on the issues that are very substantial and I think are critical to how we need to look at this. What are the things that are going to drive these costs? Are we going to have a chance to get at that, or are we going to say, well, we passed it, we took care of it, it's done, and that's what I'm fearful of. So members, we don't need to rehash the whole debate, but I would urge that we reject this bill, that we give ourselves an opportunity to come back and spend some more time and more energy looking at this going into the future in next session. Thank you.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, Senator Senjum said, we are not ready for this legislation. So I ask you all today, when are we going to be ready for reform? When are we going to do something about health care? Al Greenspan, for the last 5 years, has been saying, we've got a serious issue coming down the pipeline. Last November, he said, it's not the war, it's not our housing crisis. It's healthcare that's going to take this country and spin it out of control.
So I'm asking you, please do not underestimate the work that has been done by both groups, the commission and the task force. I mean, 9 months of working on health care reform, you must take this very serious. Every week we were meeting for a full day along with what the commission was doing. The healthcare industry is very conservative. Reform's not going to come easy to them. But we don't have a choice because, as we've said before, $57 billion we'll be spending by the year 2015. So where's the compromise? I mean, what are we going to cut when we have to pay for healthcare? Is it our schools? Is it our transportation? What's it going to be? Is it going to be the kids? You know, there were some very serious people on the task force, the governor's healthcare task force, and they took the time out of their careers to spend working on this reform. Healthcare is their career. It's their life. And I still believe in that task force. I still believe in the recommendations. And I'm asking for you, or a leap of faith, to say, yes, you did a good job. We're going to work on this. We can make mid-course corrections if we have to, but we have to do something, members. And Senator St. John said also that there was a tax on hospitals. It's not a tax. We are asking them to redirect what they do for community benefits into prevention. They don't have to pay any more, members. So there is a tremendous amount of confusion still about this bill, but I hope that you will take the task force and the Healthcare Access Commission's work serious, and let's move forward because we don't have a choice.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, I'd like to ask for a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, I move that the sergeants be instructed to bring in the absent members.
Further proceedings. All those favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator Hahn, exactly what you talked about in your comments this morning are what we're trying to accomplish in this bill. Why do we want a price from a provider for a procedure? One price instead of 500 prices? So that individuals who have those medical savings accounts will know when they spend out of their savings account how much it's going to cost them. And whether they're purchasing their care from the most effective, best outcomes provider at the best price. That can't happen in the system we have today. It just isn't going to be able to happen. Yeah, we're not telling everybody they have to have a policy that pays for everything. That's one of the reasons my good friend Senator Marty here has a few concerns about the bill. That's what he would like to see happen. But we know that if we want employers purchasing insurance, they will make a decision for what they want to offer their employees. We know when individuals are purchasing insurance, they're going to look at what their options are and make the best decision in terms of what they think fits them and their family. But what does everybody need, regardless of what kind of policy they're buying, regardless of how much they have to spend out of their own pocket on health care? They need to know whether they're purchasing at the best price and quality they can. And today that can't happen. Under this bill, it will be able to happen. And even providers themselves do not know where they stand in relationship to the cost of other providers. So that's why we have a 60% difference in prices in primary clinics in the metro area. They don't know where they stand in relationship to other providers. So they can't even be smart in terms of advising their clients, their patients, how to where to go for a specialist or where to go to get a certain test because they don't know what the cost and effectiveness is themselves. So members, I urge you to move forward. We know what happens if we sit still and do nothing. Senator Rosen is right. In a few short years, we'll see healthcare costs in this state grow to $57 billion. We will see fewer and fewer doctors going into primary care, which will strip the rural areas of this state of the resources they need to receive health care. So members, this commission in this bill brings back the plan three different times to the legislature so that the legislature can make sure that we're not going in a way that will harm our health delivery system. Please let us bring those reports back to the legislature. Let's have a green vote on this bill today.
Further discussion, Secretary will take the roll on the bill. Senate is under call. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. Being 39 ayes, 29 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. 23. Senator Pogermiller.
Remaining on motions, we will take that motion related to the rest bill. Pursuant to, Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 2.03, I move that Senate File 3193, number 172 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
Okay. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, members, this is a bill that actually was a late bill for a variety of reasons, so it does need to go to the Rules Committee.
Okay. On the motion. For discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Remaining under order of business and motions resolutions, I move that we take up the general orders calendar.
Okay, on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
I move the Senate do now resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. Senator. Chairman, before I yield to Senator Solon on the list that has been distributed, we need to strike number 60, Senate File 651. Strike that. Strike number 21, Senator Rosen. We're striking your bill. Senator Rosen, are we striking your bill 3311? Strikes number 21, 3311. Strike number 126, Senate File 3698. And on the backside, strike number 166, Senate File 3165. It's the second one from the top. And then, Mr. Chairman, I would yield to Senator Pretner Solon, number 6, Senate File 3337. And members, the idea is to go till about 12:25 or so, 12:20 maybe, and then to allow for several committee meetings, and then we would come back at 2:30 this afternoon and work for a couple hours on general orders.
Okay. The first bill, General Orders Number 6, Senate File 3337, Senator Prentner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3337 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the bill, Senator Prentner Solon.
Mr. Chair and members, last session this legislature passed nation-leading goals for reducing greenhouse gas emissions across all sectors of our economy. Senate File 3337 sets a strategy and requires regular reporting of a specific plan for how Minnesota should achieve the additional necessary greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And before I present the bill, I would like to offer the A4 amendment, which would eliminate the need for a fiscal note associated with the requirements laid out in the bill. Mr. Chair, the A4 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Prentner Solon moves to amend Senate File 3337 as follows. Page 1, delete subdivisions 3 and 4 and insert. This is amendment A-4.
Senator Prentner Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senate File 3337 as amended requires the Minnesota Department of Commerce and the Pollution Control Agency to submit a plan to the legislature by November 1st of every even-numbered year. Previously, before the amendment, it was an annual request. The plan should outline the most recent and best available evidence identifying the level of greenhouse gas emissions reductions already achieved and the level necessary to achieve the reductions in our state's emissions reductions goal laid out in statute. It requires the report to be easily understood and in non-technical terms. The second major component of the bill requires that the Commissioners of Commerce and the Pollution Control Agency annually propose legislation that they deem appropriate to achieve the emissions reductions goal in statute. If the commissioners determine no legislation is appropriate, they shall report that determination to the legislature with the rationale for their decision. Any legislation proposed by the commissioners must be based on the following 7 principles. First, the reduction specified in statute must be attained. Second, the reductions must be attained on a schedule that keeps pace with the reduction timetable that is required by statute that sets out the state's greenhouse gas emissions reductions goal. Third, conservation and energy efficiency are the first choice for reduction. Fourth, public education is a key component. Fifth, government should lead by example. And six, strategies that may lead to economic dislocation should be phased in and should be coupled with strategies that address the dislocation. And finally, there should be coordination with other federal and regional greenhouse gas emissions reductions requirements. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, this concludes a summary of the bill and the amendment. I would ask for your support on the amendment and then on the bill, and I will stand for questions. Thank you.
Senator Prentner Solon has moved to amend Senate File 3337. Is there further discussion? Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Senator Prentner Solon, I apologize if I missed your introductory comments, but did you say why you want to take out the sections? I think this is a really good bill, and I support it. You're taking out, I think, the sections on public education, information, review of activities of other states, and stakeholder involvement. Are those the pieces that are being deleted? And if so, why do you want to take those out? I think those are good provisions.
Senator Prentner Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, part of the reason is to avoid a fiscal note and to put more of the responsibility on the legislature. And all of these are, the public education is still included in the bill, it's just included under a part of the reduction principles. There will not be a stakeholder process. Instead, legislation will be brought to the legislature. The legislature will be reviewing it and deciding whether legislation should advance.
Further discussion on the amendment. Hearing none, the question occurs on Senator Prentner Solon.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Senator Betzel.
I do have a question, Senator Solon. Your amendment says that the Commissioners of Commerce and the PCA shall annually, by November 1, provide to the chairs of the legislative committees with primary policy jurisdiction proposed legislation. Why did you choose the date of November 1st? Because in every even-numbered year, that will be right around the time that the House of Representatives has an election, and in other years, it'll be around the time of both the House and the Senate have elections. So having proposed legislation sent right before the elections, when we don't even know who is going to be in the legislature the following year, and it's going to take some time for organization. They're having everybody hurry up to prepare these proposed legislation, and where is it going to go and who's going to get it? Because we won't know that until sometime in January. Why did you suggest November 1st for these deadlines?
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Betzold, this was a date that was discussed with commissioners. It was something that they could easily comply with. And it was really believed by the committee that if we had the recommendations early enough that we could be prepared for legislation that came up the following year. Now, I understand that on every fourth year we may have a new composition of committee members, but generally we don't have any difficulty responding and preparing. It also gives the LEETF a chance to look at this information.
Senator Betzold.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Solon, it may be convenient for the commissioners. It's not going to be workable for the legislature. It's not every 4 years. Every other year, the House is up for reelection. And if you're having this submitted by November 1st, you're going to have it before the elections even take place. We don't know who's going to win the elections. We don't know who's going to be in charge of the legislative bodies. They'll be sending it to maybe the past chair, which may or may not make any difference. And then it'll sit around for 2.5 months before we even have anybody acting on it. So, Senator Prettner-Solon, that makes no sense at all. Mr. Chair, if it's appropriate, I can offer an amendment to the amendment to make this work.
Senator Prettner-Solon, did you want to respond first? Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chairman, I would move as an amendment to the amendment on page 1, on line 3, and on line 11, change November 1 to January 15.
We'll report the amendment.
Senator Betzold moves to amend the Prettner-Solon amendment as follows. On page 1, lines 3 and 11, delete November 1 and insert January 15.
And Mr. Chair, apparently it currently says of each even-numbered year. It says each even-numbered year on line 1.3, and I think that should be each odd-numbered year.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, an even-numbered year was purposely chosen so that it would be in preparation for our budget years, and years in which we would have more deliberate policy. I would ask if Senator Betzold doesn't like November 1st, if November 15th would work better.
Senator Betzold.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Prettner-Solon, that is not how it works around here. By November 15th, in many years, you've just had an election, especially in the even-numbered years. We don't know. We may know who's been elected. We don't know necessarily what the organization of the bodies are. What I suggest you might do is just progress the amendment and progress the bill until you figure out how it works. Frankly, Senator Prettner-Solon, you know, it won't bother me to adopt this amendment. It's just not going to be workable to have this language and have these reports in at this time period. It doesn't bother the agencies. It's just not going to work within the legislature. So I suggest you progress the amendment, progress the bill until you have something that actually works.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Mr. Chair, this is a very important bill. I will accept Senator Betzold's amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment to the amendment.
Just change the dates.
Okay. Senator Betzold, do you need even change to odd?
No. Leave it to January 15th on both lines.
on the amendment to the amendment. Further discussion. Senator Betzel.
It would be Mr. Chair, it would be on page 1, line 3, change November 1 of each even to January 15 of each odd, and then on line 11, change November 1 to January 15.
We'll have the clerk report the amendment.
Senator Betzold is moving to amend the Prettner-Solon amendment as follows on page 1, line 3, delete November 1 and insert January 15 and delete even and insert odd. And on line 11, delete November 1 and insert January 15.
Further discussion? Hearing none, the question occurs on Senator Betzold's amendment to the amendment. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion carries. So we go back to the Prettner-Solon motion as amended. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Further discussion on the Prettner-Solon Senate File 3337 as amended.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question about the underlying bill, Senator Prettner-Solon. Maybe you could respond to it. Is there anything in this bill that would repeal the current prohibition that we have in statute from having a nuclear power plant in Minnesota?
Senator Prettner-Solon?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, there's no language to that effect in here.
And Mr. Chairman, and here's the concern I have. We've had this prohibition for exploring nuclear power in Minnesota for some time, and we've now had some recommendations about the need to focus on reducing greenhouse gases as part of our energy policy. But it seems to me that the first and easiest step that we could take would be to repeal that prohibition. I think it's universally recognized whether or not people support nuclear power or they don't. It's a universally recognized fact that nuclear power generation does not emit greenhouse gases. And I think if we are serious about saying this is a premise for activity, we ought to take that as the very first step. And so, members, I'm reluctant to start going down the path of focusing on other things to reduce greenhouse gas emissions unless we're at least willing to overturn the prohibition statute that prevents us from even entertaining the idea of a nuclear power plant. There's nothing to say that we would be able to do that anytime soon, but we could at least take the prohibition away. And I know there's been some bills introduced in previous years, and I think even this year, I think Senator Dill has a bill that would do that. And so, members, I would urge us to not adopt these bills until we do the first thing first. And to me, the first thing would be to eliminate that prohibition against nuclear power in Minnesota.
Further discussion? Seeing none, there be no further discussion. The question occurs on the motion of Senator Prettner-Solon that Senate File Number 3337, as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The committee has before it now number 22 on your general orders calendar. Senate File 3089. The chair recognizes Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3089 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dahl has moved that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3089 be recommended to pass. Senator Dahl.
Senate File 3089 is all about planting a few trees. The Minnesota Department of Commerce's Conservation Improvement Program encourages utilities to reduce consumer energy usage by requiring they spend a percentage of their revenues on grant programs subsidizing direct conservation methods, such as switching fluorescent over to incandescent bulbs or even home insulation. Up until 2006, the Minnesota Department of Commerce approved the planting of trees and shrubs as an energy conservation method, But then they stopped approving that. Basically, the reasoning at the time was their desire to focus on short-term energy savings rather than long-term energy efficiency and savings provided by trees and shrubs. Since then, they have revisited their mission, and the Commerce Department is not opposed to including strategic tree planting as part of their CIP program. A few facts. The U.S. Department of Energy reported that planting trees can save the average household up to $250 annually on energy bills. They also reported that a full landscape of trees and shrubs can cut utility bills by 25 to 50%. And according to a study by the U.S. Forest Service and the Minneapolis Parks and Recreation Board, street trees in Minneapolis can save citizens $6.8 million in annual energy costs. The same research study found that every tree planted in the right place and given proper care provides $3 to $7 in annual benefits for every dollar spent in their care. This bill does have the support of the Minnesota DNR and the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. I urge your support for Senate File 3089.
Senator Dahl, did you have an amendment to this
I do not at this time.
Further discussion on Senate File 3089. Seeing none, Senator Dahl removes, seeing none, let me say it the way it's supposed to be said. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Dahl that Senate File 3089 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Chamber, we move to number 106 on general orders. This will be House File number 3157 on general orders. And the chair recognizes Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 3157 is a bill that simply allows Big Stone County to shift some of the duties of one county office to another county office. It isn't a huge change in direction, but it is a bit of a change for the county. But it doesn't make any sense to me, I guess, when you listen to the testimony from the county to not allow this change to happen. This is not a combination of jobs at the county level like we've heard here several times. This is just a shifting of a small part of the responsibilities from one office to another. I'd appreciate your support.
Senator Kubley, I do need you to make the motion.
I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File or House File 3157 be recommended to pass.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Kubley has moved that when this committee do arise that House File 3157 be recommended to pass. We have heard an explanation. Is there further discussion? There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Kubley that House File 3157 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. We move to number 29 on general orders, Senate File 2929, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2929 be recommended to pass.
The committee has before it, Senator Vickerman has moved that when this committee do arise, the Senate File 2929 be recommended to pass. An explanation, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 2929 has to do with nonprofits, grants to nonprofits. A political subdivision of the state may make monetary or in-kind grants to any nonprofit organization qualifying under Section 501(c)(3) of the International Revenue Code of 1986 as amended if the grant is for a public purpose and is to support an education, social service, health, or charitable purpose. Authority is in addition to any already in law. A grant may be made after the proposal to make the grants is heard and voted on at a regular scheduled meeting of the body. Mr. Chair, Chairman and members, the bill really refers specifically to charities exempt from the federal corporate income tax requirement under the 501(c)(3) of the tax code, disbursement of 501c3 nonprofit organizations must be for a public purpose and recorded in the public record. The bill would prevent individual organizations or even categories from seeking their own bill, and the bill clarifies the authority of local units of government to make decisions about their communities. Local units of government would still retain authority to deny requests, and the IRS grants this exception to organizations that serve charitable, religious, scientific, or educational purposes and ensure that no part of the income generated by the organization goes to benefit any one person or board member.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just have a question. I don't know if anybody has looked at this. Is there an expectation or an estimate of how much potential money would be granted from local governments to charitable interests? Is there any estimate that's been made? How big of a impact would this have potentially? Does anybody know?
Seeing no response, Senator Hahn.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I guess the question I have is, it seems to me that if we're interested in trying to get money to charities, we ought to think about reducing the tax burden on people and allow individuals to contribute to charities that they believe in, rather than having the taxes be collected, be given to the state, to be given to local governments, then they choose which charities to give the money to. It seems to me a very convoluted way to get money in the hands of charities. If we're interested in doing that, then let's do something like reduce the tax burden and encourage direct contributions from individuals.
Further discussion on Senate File 2929. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Vickerman that Senate File 2929 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. The committee has now before it number 5 on the general orders calendar. This is House File number 3289. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File, actually House File 3289, be recommended to be passed.
Senator Stumpf has moved that when this committee do arise, that House File 3289 be recommended to pass. Senator Stumpf on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill was brought to me by the Minnesota State Auctioneers Association, and one of the reasons that it was brought here is that charitable organizations hire auctioneers to do fundraising for them. And it was brought to the Auctioneers Association that when you're involved with charitable organizations, they have a statute that they have to report to the Attorney General and collect a significant amount information to supply to the Attorney General's office. The role of the auctioneer is not, the auctioneer does not handle any money, has no involvement with the money. All he is doing is basically doing the work of calling an auction sale or an auction event. And so what this legislation does is it allows licensed and bonded auctioneers who are conducting a live auction and who have no access to the proceeds of that auction not to be or to be exempt from that registration and reporting requirement to the Attorney General's office. And this has been cleared with the Attorney General's office. This basically recognizes that auctioneers will not be considered professional fundraisers, and if they do, then they'd have to comply with that regulation.
Further discussion on House File 3289. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Stumpf that House File 3289 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. The committee has before it Senate File 28, Senate File 2948 on general orders. The chair recognizes Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2948 be recommended to pass.
Senator Larson has moved that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2948 be recommended to pass. To the bill, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill would repeal the law that provides for final offer total package arbitration for Minnesota's firefighters. This legislation was brought to me from the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association. Under current law, when the employer and the firefighters go to arbitration, the arbiter only has two choices, the position of the employer or the position of the arbiter. And this legislation would allow for more flexibility for the arbitrator to determine the cases and provide for an outcome that makes sense in terms of a compromise. And so, members, I'd stand for any questions. But again, this was an issue or a provision that has the support of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 2948. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Larson that Senate File 2948 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. We will go to number 3 on the general orders calendar. That is Senate File 2939. The chair recognizes Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2939 be recommended to pass. Members, 2939 is a bill that sets up a streamlined process for the alternative form of regulation for mid-sized companies in telecommunications. This plan has been worked out with the Department of Commerce and the PUC for acceptable language. It simply codifies a procedure where mid-sized companies can opt in to this A4 in a streamlined fashion, and either by adopting current negotiated adopting the currently negotiated plan of a larger company. It's in essence, it saves the company quite a bit of money, and it's already been, like say, negotiated with the PUC and the Department of Commerce. Nothing really changes on the rest of the alternative form of regulation. I stand for any questions.
Senator Dahl has moved that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2939 be recommended to pass. We have heard the explanation. Any further discussion? There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Dahl that Senate File 2939 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of this motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. The committee has before it now number 57 on general orders. This is Senate File 3377. The chair recognizes Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3377 be recommended to pass.
Senator Wergen has moved that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3377 be recommended to pass. Senator Wergen, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In 1990, the Furniture Fire Safety Act was passed, and it addressed flammability standards in furniture in public buildings, and it was of a very limited scope. It covered only public occupancies, healthcare facilities, correctional facilities, child daycare centers, public auditoriums, and stadiums. And so it was limited in scope. And the purpose of passing the Fire Safety Act was the careless use of cigarettes in some of these facilities. However, since that time, smoking is not allowed in any of the facilities, and other furniture safety acts have taken place. And so there is no need to have this law in the books anymore. So it simply repeals an obsolete provision in law. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Wergen. Other discussion on Senate File 3377. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Wergen that Senate File 3377 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. We're going to go to number 173 on general orders calendar. This is Senate File 3492. The chair recognizes Senator Clark. We'll turn our General orders, page over, and go to 168. Members, 168 on general orders. This will be House File 2898. And the chair recognizes Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, House File 2898 be recommended to pass.
Senator Prettner-Solon has moved that when this committee do arise, that House File 2898 be recommended to pass. Senator Prettner-Solon, to the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill arises from an incident involving a previous constituent and his family. In August of 2003, there was a plane crash in Grand Marais, Minnesota. There were three passengers in the plane, a mother and her two daughters. The pilot, Charlie Erickson, and passenger Catherine Pearson died in the crash. The two girls, Grace, who was then 4 years old, and Lily, who was 3 years old, survived. Catherine, Grace, and Lily all lived in Duluth at the time of the crash. These young girls had extensive medical injuries. Grace and Lily spent approximately 3 and 8 weeks, respectively, in various hospitals. When the girls emerged from the hospitals and the medical bills started arriving, their family was informed that the airplane insurance company was denying coverage. This started more than 3 years of litigation between the family and the insurance company. Finally, after more than 3 years, the parties entered into a settlement. At the end of last session, we passed a bill which created the Aviation Insurance Meet and Confer Groups. This group, comprised of members of the Pilots Association and other pilot representatives, various representatives of the insurance industry, and other interested parties, met several times during the interim. The group's meetings covered a wide variety of topics and potential issues, but it ultimately ended up with a few recommendations. The bill language in front of us is a compromise that evolved from these meetings. Passing this bill in this form will help to ensure that pilots get what they pay for when they purchase insurance. And while passage of this bill may not eliminate the possibility of another innocent third-party victim having to suffer through the chaos and turmoil that the Pearsons had to experience, it will certainly narrow the chances. The bill is very straightforward. It simply requires that a direct causal connection to the loss be made before an insurance company can deny an aviation accident claim. Essentially, what this means is that when there is a crash, in order for the insurance company to deny the claim, the insured pilot's action or failure to act must have had a direct causal connection to the loss. This law has been in effect in other states such as Texas. Minnesota is not breaking new ground on this issue. This bill has passed the Commerce and Judiciary Committees this year, and I respectfully ask for member support. I am happy to stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 2898. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Prettner-Solon that House File 2898 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. Senator Clark, are you ready to come back to you? Members, we'll go. The committee has before it number 173 on the general orders calendar. This will be Senate File number 3492, and the chair recognizes Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3492 be recommended to pass.
Senator Clark has moved that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3492 be recommended to pass. Senator Clark, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brief explanation. Every year, the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women's is approached by women who need long-term protection. Currently, these women must go back to court each year to renew their orders before they expire. Going through this legal process every year ensures there will always be a certain level of engagement between the battered woman and the abuser. This extracts a financial, emotional, and psychological toll on these battered women, not to mention being potentially dangerous. Senate File 3492 strengthens the order for protection statute by adding language that gives the court specific authority to order the respondent to have no contact with the petitioner. The current order for protection law does not specifically state that the court can order a respondent to have no contact with the petitioner. The court has been ordering this relief under the catch-all clause that the court may order other relief as it deems necessary for the protection of the petitioner. Courts routinely order no contact. The Supreme Court's uniform forms have a no contact provision. Direct respondent to have no contact with me or the minor child or children, whether in person or through other persons by telephone, letter, or in any other way. So what does this do? This proposed language adds the explicit language into the relief of the section, relief that's always been implied. In addition, it increases the standard time period for an order of protection from 1 year to 2 years. Under the current statute, the harassment order statute, the standard time frame is for 2 years. This change makes the OFP statute consistent with the harassment statute, allowing the court to grant an OFP or an HRO that lasts up to 50 years. When there is a persistent chronic abuser, the court may issue a long-term OFP or harassment order. The permanent OFP, in terms of the computer database, what you should know, members, is that the reason for 50 years is while a permanent lifelong one might be the preferred mechanism, the reason why it's 50 years is that our computers can't actually handle it that way. So what's happened in other states, and to have a clear and consistent enforcement of orders, the 50-year OFP or HRO is in the bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 3492. There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Clark that Senate File 3492 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of this motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails.
The next bill on general orders will be number 58, Senate File 3669, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 3669 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the bill, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3669 will require the Commissioner of Transportation to submit a report to the legislature proposing a program to mitigate the impact of transportation construction projects on small businesses in the state of Minnesota. This particular report should contain information for giving to business owners whose property will be affected by a planned construction project, including the project description, timeline, anticipated effects of traffic, parking, and access, contact information for appropriate staff, and available financial resources if they exist to small business owners. This bill is an important piece of legislation that will support small business and will give them the information that they need in order to prepare for times of construction. And as you know, members, we have many projects coming to our districts, and it is important that we inform small business owners about the impact. And so this proposes that the Commissioner of Transportation, Commissioner of Economic Development, local organizations, and the local Chamber of Commerce work together to provide this information to small businesses.
Further discussion on Senate File 3669. Seeing none, Senator Torres Ray renews her motion that when this committee to arise at Senate File 3669 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you.
Next bill under consideration on general orders will be number 39, Senate File 3256, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3256 be recommended to pass.
Senator Scogin, discussion on the bill.
Senate File 3256 modifies some of the license requirements for day training and habilitation programs.
not requiring a separate license where they have adjacent buildings.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Senator Scogin renews his motion that when this committee do arise, it's set a file 3256 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on general orders be number 141 on general orders, Senate file 2828, Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file number 2828 be recommended to pass.
Senator Moi on the bill.
Members, in anticipation of the Republican National Convention, the City of St. Paul is doing some assessments of areas of potential security concerns. And one concern that we've identified that we would like to address is the network of underground utility tunnels that's in St. Paul. City workers and local law enforcement are concerned that there are individuals who are embarking on explorations of these underground tunnels. Some of you may recall that last year we had an incident where several workers were washed away during a very sudden rainstorm while they were in the tunnels doing work. And so in anticipation of the convention, as well as for safety, we would like to deter people from exploring these tunnels. Under current law, it is a gross misdemeanor to trespass a critical public service utility, a utility, or a pipeline without permission, or if an individual refuses to leave when they are found to be there without permission, or if the property is sufficiently posted and people are not paying attention to it. Senate File 2828 amends the definition of utility line and pipeline to include below-ground pipelines housed in an underground structure to pick up the tunnel infrastructures that we're concerned about. It also lists the requirement for the posting as it pertains specifically to the underground utility and pipeline infrastructures. And just for those of you who are concerned about walking from here to the state office building, this does not apply to instances where these underground utility and pipeline infrastructures have been made available for pedestrian use. I would appreciate your support on Senate File 2828.
Further discussion on Senate File 2828? Seeing none, Senator Moi renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 2828 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on the general orders would be number 132, Senate File 3119, Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3119 be recommended to pass.
Senator Olsen on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is regards to interstate responses from Minnesota counties and cities, emergency workers in the event of an emergency across state lines. Currently, under the Emergency Management Assistance Compact, Minnesota state employees, if they respond to an emergency out of state, are covered by liability. But there's not clear legislation whether that would cover city or county or township employees or other government employees. So this bill would be sure that political subdivisions, that if they were to assist in an emergency out of state, that they would also be covered by that same liability. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion on Senate File 2819. Seeing none, Senator Olsen renews his motion that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 3119 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the Secretary, be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, Senator. Members, I think slight change of plans. We will not come back today. Apparently, there's a 3 o'clock committee meeting that needs to meet. So the idea would be to come in at 10 tomorrow and go all day. And I believe there's a conference committee at 3 or something. Maybe we'll might have to push that to 4 or something. But we'll go 10 to 3 for sure, maybe 10 to 4 or 5. And the idea, we've got about 150 40 bills left on general orders. The idea would be to just start processing them and get as many done as we can. We're not going to take the bonding bill up till Wednesday probably, and the tax bill would either be Wednesday or Thursday, and then the finance bill would be Wednesday or Thursday. So it'd be good to, so anybody who's got a bill on general orders, try to be ready, because if we go at the pace we went today, we could get a lot of those cleared off tomorrow. So I would, and then Senator Senjum and I have discussed, we will figure out a time to have caucuses for the omnibus tax bill and the omnibus finance bills. And since we don't know exactly which day we're going to take those up yet, I don't think we have to caucus the bonding bill. So we'll figure out a way to have caucuses for the finance and tax bills. So I would then stand for announcements.
Introduction to be read at the desk. Remaining under motions.
Senator Cohen for the Committee on Finance introduces Senate File 3813, a bill for an act relating to the financing of state government, making supplemental appropriations and reductions in appropriations for early childhood through grade 12 education, higher education, etc.
Under rules of the Senate, this will be laid over one day. Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, members, the invitation that you have on your desk, would you please mark that for tomorrow? Same time, same place.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the Health, Housing, Family Security meeting will meet at 1 o'clock.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans will not meet as we usually do at 7:45 tomorrow morning. But I would say that for those interested in what we call bill review, let's do that at 9 o'clock up in room 330 for those interested. 9 o'clock and 330, bill review.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Division will meet 1/2 hour at 1:10. 1/2 hour, 1:10 for the State Government Budget Division.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Mr. President, last week Minnesota lost, America lost another brave soldier. I rise to pay tribute to Specialist Gregory Rendell, a soldier from North St. Paul, who was killed in Iraq last Wednesday. Gregory was 21 years old, a graduate of North High School. He was a fun-loving person, a great artist who dreamed of becoming a police officer. He enlisted to serve our country, but that dream of becoming a police officer was terminated by sniper fire last Wednesday. Our condolences to his family. Two of his siblings are in the military, one in an ROTC program. Our condolences to his friends, his unit, and our deepest gratitude to Specialist Rendell for paying the ultimate sacrifice at the altar of freedom. I ask that we rise and give respect.
Moment of silence. Senate will be in order. Senator Latz.
Mr. President, unfortunately, we must continue the somber note. St. Louis Park's second police officer to lose his life in Iraq died. We don't know when, but Paul Rubens, former St. Louis Park police officer whose body was found after he was abducted while in private security in Iraq, has also been revealed to have been killed in the last week. And I ask for similar thoughts and condolences for his family. He leaves behind a wife and children, and I believe a grandchild as well. He was a well-respected member of the police department, one of those few kind officers that could diffuse situations with his special skill special ability to relate to all kinds of human beings. And his presence will also be missed.
Do you want to? We could rise again for a moment of silence and tribute to the St. Louis Park. Senate will be in order. Without objection, Senator Jungbauer, Senator Murphy, Senator Skoy, Bach, and Senator Ortman will be excused from today's session all day, and Senator Dill from 11 to 11:35. Any other announcements? Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate adjourn till Tuesday, April 1st, 10 a.m.
On the motion to before that, Senator Parasol, did you have a...
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes. The pages are passing out a copy of an article that was in the Cannon Falls newspaper, which I always enjoy reading. And it's about a sesquicentennial event that's a wagon train and will begin in Cannon Falls on the date in the event here, and it will come to the Capitol. So just so you're all aware of that, maybe you want to join it someplace along the way. If you have wagons or if you have horses, I'm sure you could be welcomed. Thank you.
Senator Pogemiller renews his motion that the Senate adjourn till 10 a.m., is it, Tuesday morning? On that motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.